What's going on, everybody? I'm Mara.
And I'm Taz.
And welcome back to Sisters Who Kill. We live in a society where everybody says that you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That if you were born in a certain circumstance, that you don't have to be a product of those circumstances. But what happens when the old habits, the lifestyle, and the fact that you need money creeps back? If you're listening to this, you probably already know what I'm about to say, that today is the day for you to start your podcast. You have everything that you need, your computer, a little microphone, and Spotify for podcasters. It is the all-in-one platform where you can host, edit, and record your podcast and distribute it everywhere. Where you're listening right now, you can have your podcast there. I promise, for real. And it's free. And you can make some money off of your podcast for free. Free money. Free money is out there. Just go get it by starting your podcast today.
Our players this week are Adriana Zimmerman, our victim, Heather Lee, accomplice and Tina's friend, Brittany Miller, accomplice and Tina's daughter, and Tina Brown, our murderess.
Tina Lasagna Brown was born on July 19th, 1970 to her parents, Lily and Willie Coleman Sr. I bet they thought they were so cute. She was born in North Chicago, Illinois, and her parents were young. And when they were teenagers, they got married. I'm sure as teenagers, they were like, Willie and Lily, they always around. After they got married, Tina was born shortly after. Then, shortly after Tina was born, I think it was 11 months, her brother, Willie Coleman Jr. was born, which is like Irish twins, they were born within 12 months. And because her parents got married at a very young age, their priorities were not the best. Instead of being at home and like making memories with the kids on the weekends and spending time with them and their growth and development, Lily and Willie Sr. like to party. And they did that often. And partying always included alcohol and drugs. Now, it seemed like neither one of them had a real job. From what we could tell, Willie Sr. at one point had a job that he could put on his taxes, but most of his money came from the drug game, and they were selling in and out of their house. Lily would drop the kids off at her brother's house. Her brother would be like, Friday right after school, she dropping off my niece and nephew. Don't hear from her, don't see from her, no call until Sunday night, and then she coming to pick him up. Every weekend, she never hanging out with the kids. And because of this, Tina, even though she was just 11 months older than her brother, that's still her little brother, right? So she started taking on that mom role. She was making sure that he was brushing his teeth and washing his face. She was the one that was picking out his clothes for school and making sure that he was just at least somewhat put together before they go out the house. Now, after a while, Lily and Willie Sr. began having problems in their relationship. Now, it seemed like, to me, that they had a problem with getting high off their own supply, which leads to financial problems, or you just high, you don't like each other and you fighting all the time. In 1982, a little before Tina was 12, Lily and Willie get into this huge fight, and Willie Sr. beats Lily up pretty badly. And for her, for mom, this was it. This was the breaking point. So she left Willie Sr. and she left her kids with him. He files for full custody. He's granted full custody. Lily is charged for abandoning her children and the two separate.
Willie Sr. is now a single father of two and he had to just keep making shit happen. So he's continuing to sell drugs in the house. But since Lily's not there anymore, things are taking a bit of a darker turn. Tina and Willie Jr. around 12 at this time, and I guess Willie Sr. is feeling frustrated and decides to take that out on Willie Jr. He becomes physically abusive towards him most of the time while he's high. But if that wasn't bad enough, he also begins sexually assaulting Tina at this time too. So they described it as a Celia and Mr. situation. She's there to take care of the house, please him, take care of the house and the kids. Family members said that they could tell that Tina wasn't comfortable around her father. And this led to Tina trying to leave. She ended up staying with her dad's mom and was staying with her for a while. And Tina started to get a little comfortable, and she confided with her grandmother, like, yeah, my dad has been doing some things to me. And her grandmother was like, you a lie. You a lie and a half. My son would never do that. And you got to go, because you ain't going to talk about my baby boy like that up in my house.
Which is crazy how you would protect your son from your grandchild.
So with nowhere else to go, Tina has to go back to her dad's house. Now, after a while, her dad did remarry. And the general consensus is that nobody in the family wanted him to. But Tina did say that at least once he remarried, he laid a ball for her. So the woman he married was a woman named Melinda. And Melinda's a bit of a wild child. She was described as a promiscuous drug user who liked to drink and have sex with multiple men. And sometimes this was while she was still married to Willie Sr. As Melinda came into the picture, Tina's like, okay, home life, she could be better for me now. You know, I don't have him dealing with me. Maybe I can finally be a kid, but not so fast. Because it's not like Melinda was a great influence on Willie and made things better. In fact, they would lock themselves in their bedroom for hours at a time just so they could get high without the kids bothering them. And when they did this, Tina and her brother were pretty much out on their own, wandering the streets of the neighborhood, looking for kids to play with, maybe something to eat. And when Melinda got drunk, which was all the time, she was verbally abusive to everyone around her. And it was more of the same. Now, money started getting low, times were getting hard, and Melinda looks at Tina and she was like, listen, I know how we can make some more money, and it's with you. So she introduces Tina to drugs, who is still a teen, and Tina, of course, ends up getting hooked to these drugs. And Melinda's like, girl, you want these drugs? You need some money. Oh, I'm only such and such age. I can't get a job. I can't make no money. Well, a woman got one thing that's always going to make her some money. So Melinda starts pimping out Tina to keep some income going. This didn't mean that everybody was slacking. Willie, he's got his own shit selling drugs, and he's selling drugs like as he's part of a gang. And apparently this gang has been flagged by the FBI. They have had surveillance out on them for over a year. And Willie ends up getting swept up in that, and he is arrested for a year for his involvement. Now, while he's in prison, Tina goes to live with her mom. I think her brother was with her, not very sure. But Tina and her mom bumped heads. Like, back at her house, there's no structure. There's nobody telling her what to do. She doesn't have a mom. She barely has a parent. So to come here and Miss Lily trying to act like, oh, you need to do as I say, Tina's not having that.
All of a sudden, you a mama now? I read in the court documents that she was saying that Tina had no home training. And I was like, look at her mother telling her child that she has no home training. Where was I supposed to learn it? Just a question.
Yeah, after a few weeks, Lily was like, this ain't gonna keep flying here, and she kicks Tina out.
Tina needs a place to stay, so she ends up living with one of her aunties. And this transition period from her jumping from family member to family member's house was very hard for her. In 4 years, she attended 4 different schools. Having sex to make money was everyday normal for her. And right before her senior year, she dropped out. And she was really trying. Like, I will give Tina that she was actually trying. Her dad got out of prison after his 1 year bid. And she goes back to live with him. She's like 17 at the time. She had just dropped out of school. Then she goes right back directly the year after to get her diploma, graduate. So by 18, she still has her high school diploma. So I'm like, okay, girl, you're really trying. After she gets her diploma, I don't know why she moved out of her dad's house, but she did. And from there, she needed a place to stay, so she started staying at the trap house. And this is where she met Greg Miller. Now, her and Greg were both doing drugs regularly. Her and Greg were very much together. And very quickly, she got pregnant with her first son. She has her son. He tests positive for cocaine. She didn't stop using drugs at all. Almost immediately, she's pregnant again with her second son. And basically, the same process repeated itself. And I don't know why they couldn't stop hopping on each other, but then she's pregnant again, like back to back with her third child. And this is a daughter named Brittany Miller. Now, I don't know what clicked in her, But it was when she was pregnant with her third child that she was just like, you know what? I can't do this no more. Like, I can't do this anymore. This is not life. Like, things aren't looking great. So she ends up checking herself into a rehab center. And in that rehab center, she was getting clean. She was going through the program. And she gave birth in the rehab center to her third child, Brittany Miller, born on June 2nd, 1993. Now, because she was in this treatment plan and she went through the rehab center, one of the things that she could do or her family could do is that her mom, Lily, could adopt her youngest boys, which her mom did, keeping them out of the system. And because she was going through this plan almost with Brittany, she was still able to keep full custody of Brittany. And that is exactly what she did. And so this is what Tina was on. She was sober for 4 years. She was clean. She was doing what she could for her baby girl. And that didn't mean that she was still good at choosing men. No, that was not her strong suit. She got married. He got arrested for drugs. She ended up having to work, so she got a job as a bartender. Once she was a bartender, she met another man. He was a drug dealer. And that relationship lasted 2 years. And she said, you know, I was still clean. Like, that was the last 2 years of her sobriety. She was still clean. And even though she was around it, she knew not to participate into that influence. But then he got arrested and bust for drugs. But when she started dating him, he was like, I got the money, baby. You ain't got to work no more. That's always a red flag. I just feel like, I don't know, even if you have more, like, he was like, you don't have to work anymore. You can quit your job. Quit your job, actually. I'm going to take care of everything. But you're arrested now. So now here she is. She's not working. And there's no income coming in. Then she pulls a Taz. And she starts getting speeding tickets. Mm. Taz, you remember those couple of years that you were just getting speeding ticket after speeding ticket?
Like, frustrating. I actually just got pulled over recently. My speedometer stopped working in the middle of my trip. And I got pulled over. He said, you know how fast you're going? I said, no, I don't, officer. Not at all. Told me I was doing 92. Ain't no way.
Oh, goodness. But she starts getting speeding tickets. And she has no job. So that means, and speeding tickets are expensive. Tazzy, tell us about how expensive speeding tickets are.
They're expensive in the moment, and they're expensive over time because your insurance go up. It's a trap. Don't do it.
Taz was almost like, I'm not visiting you anymore because every time I try to come to see you, I get a speeding ticket.
Oh, man.
But those charges, they add up. They add up really fast. And Tina could not keep up with her speeding tickets. And this gave her a lot of anxiety. And then the money starts piling up and there's no income. And then you start freaking out. How am I going to pay all this? And then all of a sudden you can't pay for it. And because you can't pay for it, your license gets revoked. And now if my license is revoked, I can't drive my car to go get some money or to go get a job because I can't drive no more. It's a system. It is all a trap. If you're poor, you're stuck in it, boy. And because she wasn't paying for speeding tickets, she was starting to get bitch warrants. Now, at this time, she was like, okay, I need some money. I'm going to have to shake my money maker. And she started stripping. And because she started dancing, she got back into her old drug habit. This is about a 9-year binger that she is on. She's dancing at the club. She's doing drugs all the time. And she needs money, so she's writing bad checks. She's gotten caught for bad checks multiple times. But if they get you, they get you. If they don't, you don't, they don't. And sometimes you need what you need. Finally, she gets arrested again for writing a bad check, and she is given a court order to go to another rehab center. So she goes to this rehab center, the Vermilia County Drug Court Program, and she graduated on December 13, 2016. Once she got clean, she had an interview, and then she said, quote, just to see them make it through and follow the steps and make meetings and believe in themselves, it inspires me. Like, I know I can do what I need to do. I've gone through rehab before, and I really just needed this reminder to stay clean.
So Tina graduates from this program, and she's hired as an assistant manager of a catering company called California Catering, based in Danville, Florida. She's holding down this job for about 4 years, and in these 4 years, she's promoted to manager. The owner, Mary Lewis, has great things to say about her. She says she's a model employee. She was very personable. She showed up for work on time, worked extra if I needed her. She said I trusted her with driving my car, living in my house, and working at my business. Now, Tina was in a relationship at this time, and this relationship seemed like it was a positive one. She's doing well. Her family is proud of her. She's visiting her sons often. And then she finds out her man's just cheating on her. And not with just anyone, but her boyfriend is cheating on her with her brother Willie's girlfriend. You know what Tina does when she gets stressed? She hits the drugs and she relapses again. Now, of course,
that might send me over. I'm not going to lie. That one might send me over. Is this a relapse that only lasted a month? Yeah, this the relapse that only lasted a month. My brother's girlfriend. So you made me and my brother look dumb together. No.
Of course, while she's on drugs, she's not making great decisions. She's back to writing bad checks, and Miss Mary actually had to turn her in. And she said she don't know what happened. She said Tina just fell out of sight. But Tina got her shit together real quick. The relapse only lasted about a month. And in the summer of 2009, she starts taking college classes online and ends up moving to Pensacola, Florida with her daughter, Brittany. And they lived in Escambia County in a trailer park. And Tiffany was working the Waffle House, doing what she had to do to get by. Now, the Waffle House checks just aren't cutting it. She barely has enough money to pay the bills. And her daughter, they're not even living comfortably. They're just living. She ended up feeling like, I got to quit Waffle House and turn to sex work for a more consistent bag. Now, in this trailer park, it's Tina and her now 16-year-old daughter, Brittany. And they're getting to know their neighbors, good, bad, or indifferent. Now, Brittany Angelique Miller was born on June 2nd of 1993 to her parents, Tina Brown and Greg Miller. She mostly lived with her mom after her parents broke up shortly after she was born, but she did bounce from house to house occasionally, and sometimes she would stay at her grandparents or with her father, but mostly she stayed with her mom and was raised by a single mother, and when her mom was going through it, she was going through it. Mm-hmm. She was exposed to drug raids, sexual abuse, bullying, beatings from her mother, beatings from her mother's boyfriends. She was there when her mother was writing bad checks. She was there when her mom was doing drugs. She was there when her mom was sleeping with these random men for money. She's seen it all, and she at a young age. Between the third and fifth grade, Brittany tried to commit suicide about three different times. The Danville High School Registrar's Office said that Brittany's last day of school was May 29th of 2009. She just struggled. Like, to be that young and have already attempted to take your life three different times, like, you know you're dealing with a lot all the time. Life is just so stressful.
Yeah, and by the time that she was 16, she has gone through everything that her mom has gone through. And before Tina was 16, she had gone through all that stuff too. Like, there was a generational... When Lily was 16, she was married and using drugs with Tina's daddy. It's the same thing over and over.
Mm-hmm. They're in this trailer park. They're meeting their neighbors. And two of these neighbors are Heather Lee and Adriana Zimmerman.
Heather Trinilli was born on July 13th, 1982. She had a bit of a criminal background, nothing crazy. In 2002, she was arrested for trespassing on school grounds. She was just given community service and probation. She was arrested in 2005 for aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, burglary with assault or battery, aggravated assault with intent to commit a felony, and failure to appear for felony offense. No biggie, no crazy. So for these, she pleaded noli prosequi, which basically means that it's dismissed or they're not going to pursue you anymore. Your verdict's been rendered. No biggie, right? In 2008, she was arrested for petty theft and she pleaded nolo and got 90 days suspended. She also pleaded nolo for the first one. Like, how many, do you just get unlimited nolos?
You do not.
I'm just saying. Now, their other neighbor was a white woman named Adriana Zimmerman, and Adriana was born on April 13th, 1990. She has a younger sister. I believe her name is Sarah, but I couldn't find anything else about her, really. By the time that she was 19 years old, though, she was living in the trailer park, neighbors to them. She had what I believe to either be a deep boyfriend or a husband named Michael Kelly, and two daughters, one of whom was named Amaya. Now, we did a little bit of Instagram, Facebook digging, and Michael, her deep boyfriend husband, was, you know, the type of Florida trailer trash that likes to say nigga on the internet all the time. And eventually, all of them become good buddies. Heather Lee, Adriana, Brittany, they're hanging out, they're shooting the shit. But as Florida trailer trash stories go, things start to get a little complex. Remember Tina, she's still selling her body. She's doing sex work to make some money. And usually you would just find random Johns to sleep with. Instead, she was sleeping with Heather Lee's husband. And Heather Lee's husband was supplying her with money and drugs, okay? And Adriana, remember, she's got her man, she's got her kids. She's 19. Brittany, Tina's daughter, is 16. Adriana is sleeping with Brittany's boyfriend, even though she is still in a relationship with her man. She is now in a relationship with Brittany's man. And everybody started finding out about what the three of them were doing. And their arguments started to get very loud. They started to become physical. They was always brawling in the trailer park streets. Tina is talking to Brittany one day, and she's like, you know, we're not going to take this shit all the time. We're going to do something about this, because Tina comes outside and she sees that her tires are slashed. She sees that her tires are slashed, and she automatically assumes that Adriana did it. Now, my question is, why didn't you automatically assume Heather Lee did it? Because aren't you sleeping with Heather Lee's boyfriend? But she thought that Adriana was doing it, you know, in retaliation to Brittany, right? So then Adriana gets a knock on the door from Defects, and they say, hey, we're here to investigate your house because we got an anonymous tip that this house was providing inadequate care for the children. And so Adriana is like, I know they did not call child services on me. Of course, assuming that it's Tina and Brittany. Adriana is pissed. And Brittany and them, they talk about the man that they're both fucking at the same time again. They get to fighting, and Brittany comes over there, bink, 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 just starts knocking Adriana. Like, Adriana could not get a hit in. She had a stun gun on her, tases Brittany. This shocks Brittany, like, wow. She goes back to her home. She tells her mama, Tina, what happened. Tina is, remember, she is all deep in her relapse. She's on it. Brittany tells Tina what just happened, and Tina's like, oh, hell no, absolutely not. Baby, don't even worry about it. Mama's going to take care of it.
So it's March 24, 2010. Over at Tina's house is Tina, it's Brittany, their neighbor Heather, and a 13-year-old who is said to be a friend of Brittany's. Now, at this moment, Tina is very high off cocaine, which she got from Heather's man. Now, Adriana is on her way over to the house to join them. Before she gets there, Tina is explaining to Heather how to use a stun gun correctly. And Brittany tells his 13-year-old friend, we fixing to kill Adriana. Adriana, she shows up. She's thinking the girls want to talk it out, smooth things over so that they can be good neighbors, right? So it's 9 p.m. Adriana arrives, and she gets a little comfortable, and then I don't know where Tina pulls out a stun gun and puts it on her and doesn't stun her once, but multiple times. And after being shot so much, Adriana's body just goes limp and she falls on the floor. Now, even though she's down, that doesn't stop Tina. Tina continues to keep stunning her with the gun. And eventually Adriana starts crying and screaming, begging for help, begging for them to stop. Then Tina drags Adriana to the bathroom, and this is because Adriana is still screaming at this point, so I guess Tina's trying to move her to the back or something. Tina strikes Adriana in the face and stuffs a sock in her mouth to shut her up. From there, they put Adriana in the trunk of the car and they drive off. I say trunk of the car, but it's like a compact SUV type shit. Like think of a RAV4. They put her in the trunk of there. Now, only Tina, Brittany, and Heather pile in a car. The 13-year-old stays. Tina drives all four of them to a clearing in the woods that's about a mile and a half from the trailer park. And once they get there, they pull Adriana out the trunk And immediately, of course, she tries to run away, but she trips, and Tina and Brittany were able to catch up to her. Now the two of them wrestle Adriana to the ground, and they both start attacking her. Tina's using a stun gun, and Brittany, they say she brought a crowbar, but looking at the crime scene photos, I don't know why they're calling it a crowbar, because it's a hammer. It's a hammer, and when you look at the hammer, like, if you just put your head straight up and look at the ceiling, that's how the hammer look. Like, that shit, it's cocked the fuck back, like, and I don't know.
Oh.
Right. Like, you got to be doing some serious damage to bend a hammer like that. And they're beating her with this. They're still stunning her with the gun. They're fighting with their fist. They're just switching weapons, doing it again, some more. Adriana's trying to fight back, but there's not much she could do. She grabs a hold of Tina's hair and ends up ripping the track out. Now, Brittany eventually just starts going with her fist wailing on her. And that's when Tina goes back to the car and gets a can of gas and pours it on Adriana. Adriana is still conscious. She sees everything that's going on. She is feeling all of these hits. I don't know about you, but if somebody beat my ass and then they proceed to pour gas on me, I'm freaking out. Because there's nothing like being burnt. Being burnt alive. Like, where are we going with this? Everybody calm down. Tina continues to pour the gas on her and then reaches in her back pocket, pulls out a lighter, and sets Adriana on fire while she's still alive. And they literally sit there and they watch her scream and cry. And she is in an unbelievable amount of pain. And this is getting Brittany excited. She's watching Adriana burn and she's jumping up and down screaming, "Burn, bitch, burn." And Heather's there watching too. After a while, the three of them get back in the car and they leave Adriana there in the middle of the woods.
Streaming October 6th on Paramount Plus.
First place I learned about death was a pet cemetery. Dead things buried in that land would come back as something else. Something's wrong with Timmy.
He needs time to adjust.
That's not Timmy. Something's talking through him.
Sometimes dead is better.
Pet cemetery. Bloodlines. Rated R. Streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Instacart helps you get beer and wine delivered in as fast as an hour. So, whether you need to fill the cooler for tailgate season or fill your glass for Pinot by the fire season, you can save time by getting fall sips delivered in just a few clicks. Visit instacart.com or download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum order $10. Additional terms apply. Must be 21 or over for alcohol delivery where available. Instacart. Add life to cart.
Now, while they're driving away, Brittany is like, "Mom, Mom, Mom, we have to go back. I left my shoes. I left the taser. We have to go back." Tina is like, "No, we're not going back. We did it. It's done. Let's go." They get rid of all their clothes. Heather, she has to throw away a pair of shoes because there was blood all on her shoes. The 13-year-old friend was at the trailer. We don't know their name. But the 13-year-old friend was at the trailer the whole time. And when they get back and they're disrobing, Brittany is like, "Damn, my hand hurts." Turns out she messed up her hand very, very badly from laying blows on Adriana. And she asked her 13-year-old friend to take her to the hospital. Her 13-year-old friend does drive her to the hospital using Tina's car. Her wounds are taken care of and she comes back home early the next morning. And when she gets there, she throws away a bag of clothes that had blood all on them in a dumpster that was very close by. Now, back in the woods that night, Adriana is alive and she's not screaming for help. She really can't scream. And this man, Terrence Hendrick, he hears somebody like faintly in the woods saying help. And he's like, "Nah, I'm tripping." I'm sure he was like, "Nah, I'm tripping," because he couldn't see where it was coming from and it sounded so faint. But Adriana is up and she is moving and she is slowly making her way a third of a mile to Terrence's house. When she knocks on Terrence's door, Terrence, he was like, "I heard that faint. Please help me." I open the door. I see this. All I can tell is that she's a woman. He can't tell her age. She's charred from head to toe, so he couldn't tell her race. She didn't have any clothes on. he knew that it was a woman probably because she didn't have any clothes on, but like her face was 2 times as big as it was supposed to be. She's swollen from the blows, and he calls 911 and they wait on the EMT's arrival. The EMT say when they showed up, she was just sitting on the front porch. Her arms were just, she had her arms straight out because you couldn't have your arms to the side, right? Like you're in that much pain. And she's just basically rocking back and forth waiting on the EMTs to arrive. Like she's in excruciating pain. They arrive at 9:42 p.m. And when they're trying to treat her, you know, if you come and it's a burn, you put gauze on it, but they didn't have enough gauze for her entire body because 90% of her body is covered in burns. They were like, okay, I can definitely tell that her jaw is either broken or dislocated. They tried to put like a neck brace on her. You couldn't put a neck brace on her because as soon as you touched her, her skin was just falling off in layers. Finally, the EMTs are able to get her into a gurney, get her onto the ambulance, and get her to the hospital. But remember, she's alive. She is conscious through this entire thing. They ask her what happened, and she says that she was jumped, that she was beat up, and she's telling them exactly what happened. They said, who did this to you? And she says, Tina and Heather. Now, I don't know why she didn't say Brittany, but she only said Tina and Heather. And so they're like, okay, what can you tell us? And she tells them her address, and of course, their neighbor. So she's able to tell them everybody else's address. And she was like, I went over there because we've had some blows with each other, but I thought that we were going over there to make up. I didn't expect this to happen. At the hospital, they were able to get her stabilized, but they had to transfer her from, what were they, Pensacola, Florida, to the University of South Alabama Hospital because they had a burn trauma center that she needed while she was trying to recover from this horrible incident. And because of that, she was also put into a medically induced coma because her pain levels were just that high. Now, when Brittany was at the hospital that night that she got her hand treated, she was talking to her friend Pam, Pamela Valley. And she was telling Pam at the hospital what happened the night before. She's like, yeah, we got that. We got her. We beat her up. We lit her on fire and we didn't look back.
This wasn't a hard investigation. We've already been given a name. We know the location in which he's found. We're tying up loose ends here, right? So the detectives go, of course, straight to Heather and Tina and bring them on down to the station. They did go back to the crime scene and they discovered several pieces of evidence, including a white pair of shoes. It's like ugly ass shoes. It's a little white slipper, like them little ballerina shoes with the big ass buckle on it. In addition to the shoes, they find a stun gun with blood on the handle. They find paper with blood stains on it. They find this crowbar / hammer and a pool of blood. They also find an orange, some gold, and some black hair weave. Now, once they've got Tina into the station, they're, of course, about to interview her. They interview Tina and they interview Heather. I didn't get access to Heather's interview, but Tina is in the interrogation room and the cops are like, so obviously we know something's up. Tell us what happened tonight. And she like, oh, ain't nothing happened that I know of. Heather just said that Adriana got beat up real bad. And they said, let me see your hands. She holds out her hands. They said, are these old scars? And she's like, yeah, I have a puppy. I said, tell me where you were tonight. She says, oh, I was at Heather's. She was like, my daughter was braiding my hair, and then it started hurting, and her friend came by, and they got to talking, and then Heather texted me and told me that she was cooking, so I went down there, and she cooked some fish and some french fries, and then we was just watching movies. And they said, did you leave Heather's house? And she said, mm-mm. And I said, so you was there all night until the cops came? She said, mm-hmm. And they was like, so what time did you go over there? She's like, I don't know. I ain't check a clock. And it was like, if you could best describe what time. She was like, it just started getting dark. They said, okay. You went around sunset. Did anybody else go over there? Or was anybody else over there? Oh, just had this husband. What's his name? Darren. And nobody else came by? She said, my daughter Brittany, she hurt her hand. And she's so funny. Because she don't say her little girlfriend. She said she had her little friend girl at the house. And she said she said little friend girl at least 3 times. She said she had a little friend girl at the house, and she said when she hurt her hand, she said, whenever Brittany says she want to go to the emergency room, usually we get there and it turns out to be nothing. So I just stopped going with her. So I ain't go with her to the emergency room, but she had went to the emergency room and she had a little friend girl, Mallory, go with her. And I think she had another little friend girl, Jessica, go from the store.
I just feel like little friend girl is proper because the girl is 13 years old.
Her little friend girl.
Her little friend girl.
So she's like, so Brittany came by the house. She's like, yeah, she came by to tell me that her hand was hurt. They said, what time did Brittany get there? She said, I don't know. They said, have you been there long? She says, no. They said, so early in the evening? She said, maybe 30, 40 minutes after I got there. They said, so 7:30? She said, I don't know what time it was. They said, you said 30, 40 minutes after sunset, right? And it was, she said, no, after I got there. And they said, and you got there at sunset, right? She's like, then yeah, I guess you're right. 30, 40 minutes after sunset. Yeah, that sound right. They're like, okay, we don't want to put no words in your mouth. They're trying to play it real cool. And it was like, tell us what's been going on with you and Adriana this week. She said, a whole bunch of stuff. She said, actually, she was over my house. And she said that one of the neighbors came and put a virus on her computer. And usually Brittany helps her operate it past the virus. But Adriana was over there trying to help her pull up iTunes so that they could watch a movie. And then there was some white guy, James, over there. And then Adriana went to go get 3 naked movies to see if he wanted to buy them. Her words, not mine. The officer said, do y'all have any problems? She said, oh, yeah, we've been having problems since first 3 trailers we had out there. We done had problems for a long time. I said, what type of problems? She said, lately, the new problem is she think I'm the one who got her boyfriend locked up. They said, so she's mad at you. She's like, yeah, but we talked about it earlier today. And they was like, but y'all got along today, no problem. She's like, yeah. He said, do you know what happened to her? She says, oh, Heather said she got beat up real bad. They said, no, ma'am, it's more than that. We don't know if she's going to make it. And she told us that you and Heather did it to her. And she's like, me? I did that to her? She was like, no. Because, see, we done had issues, but we had worked that all out today. She was like, as a matter of fact, she been saying a whole lot of shit. She said that I'm the one who called DFAS on her baby. She said I'm the one who got her baby daddy locked or her boyfriend locked up. But that ain't true. She say a lot of things. This sound like hearsay to me. She throwing out words. This sound like hearsay. And they was like, this is what she told us. And she's just getting a little riled up. She starts crying. She's like, no, because they had no issues. If anything, she had an issue with me. She pulled a taser on my daughter the other day and stunned her with it. And they was like, oh, yeah. She was like, yeah, and the cops had to come out there. And I ain't even pressing no charges. But, yeah, the other day, she had just got into it talking about I did that. And they was like, she said, she always saying I did shit. They was like, we look, and you did get her boyfriend locked up. She said, just that one time. But the other times he got locked up, it wasn't me. Cops are like, okay, we're going to look into it some more. And Heather and Tina get arrested, but there's no bail, and they end up releasing them. Because at this point, Adriana's still on life support. She's still alive. At worst, we have intent to kill or assault, but maybe attempted murder, but we don't have quite a murder just yet, right? So then Brittany gets released from the hospital because she's there getting her hand checked out. She goes home. She's arrested the next day. They find out Adriana's still alive. She's in a coma. Tina asks her friend Pam, the one who she was told that she did this in the first place. She's like, Pam, seems like this bitch still alive. Finish her off for me. Pam said, fuck that. You're taking it a little too far. And she goes and tells the cops about what Tina just asked her to do. And so Adriana is in there fighting for her life. And after 16 days, she succumbs to her injuries and ends up being pronounced dead on April 9th of 2010. They wrote her official cause of death as multiple thermal injuries, and they ruled it a homicide, of course. The burns were all over her body, which is what has caused her death. And she was surrounded by her family when she passed. Her father wasn't able to be with her. But they definitely showed up for her in the hospital. And her kids, who were 4 and 6 years old, now had to be raised by their Aunt Sarah in Seattle, Washington. That's crazy. You're legit. These kids moved all the way across the country because they're in Florida. So they went from the bottom right, the top left, like, whew.
That of the system.
Her funeral was held on April 24th, 2010 in Plainview, Texas. The cops, they dig a little deeper. They're running these stories together. And now Adriana has passed. They said it's time to bring Brittany, Heather, and Tina back up in here. Arrest them again. So they're arrested at the Lincoln Park subdivision without incident. Now, in this time, they've also been able to collect more evidence, and they've issued a search warrant, and they find blood in the passenger seat of the headrest in Tina's car. They bring Tina in for another little chat. And they sitting there and they talking to Tina. They're like, listen, we got a lot of evidence on you. And here she go again. What kind of evidence? Hearsay? If it's hearsay, we all got something to say. Everybody talking in this trailer park. What kind of evidence right. You got on me? What you got to say that I did this? And they was like, I'll tell you some examples of some evidence we got. How about Adriana told us that you did it? She said, me. They said, yeah. But why don't you let us finish? We said, we see that Brittany's hand is beat up. We know that it's because she was beating that girl up. You poured lighter fluid on her. And we even heard that you mad at Brittany because she got up off the girl and that's how she managed to get away. She said, I'm mad at my baby? Okay, sir, what else? And they said that Adriana told two people. She told the fire chief and she told the EMS operator. And she was like, when she told them this? They said before she put her under. It was her dying declaration. She said, what's that? He was like, somebody about to die. And they tell you this last thing. She said, right. So tell me this, right? Is she about to die? And she's sitting there laying on the ground burning. Don't you think she would have told you everything? Don't you think she would have told you the whole story? They was like, ma'am, she did what she could considering she was in immense amount of pain and fighting for her life. She was more focused on the question, am I going to die? Am I going to die? Tina's like, because let me tell you something. And she getting riled up, y'all. She's like, let me tell you something. She said, because I went to the house with me and Heather, went to the house of the guy who called 911. Whoever y'all said, TV, what name start with a T. We went to his house and we asked, did she call out our names? Because everybody's saying, newspapers, everything saying that she named us. Did you hear her name us? Now, when she named us, was she just calling our names? Or did she say, Tina did it, right? Or did she just say Tina? Like, we don't even know what that means, just calling my name, right? And he told us that she passed out. If she passed out, why did she tell the fire chief and the EMS guy that we did it? She said, ma'am, you can listen to him if you want to, but we have all the information. He goes, I heard. You heard? How you can hear what they say, but you don't got to hear what I say? He said, lower your tone. She said, I'm upset. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, I can leave right now. He said, I don't owe you nothing. I don't know you, and I don't care to know you. So you can listen to what I have to say, because I've shared some evidence about what we have going on. So you can either listen to what I have to say, or you can listen to these people talking. But he was like, so do you want to hear what I got to say? She's like, yeah, I want to hear what you got to say. Y'all, she crying. She getting stressed. She can see the end coming. He said, because you talking to people talking about all she got to do is die and you'll be good to go. That ain't it. She's sobbing. She like, I said, right. They said she was in a coma. They said she was in a coma. And now she's not. Why you think we coming in here like gangbusters? That's what he said. He said, why you think we coming in like gangbusters? She's dead, bro. So they start going hard on her. They're like, these kids, they're never going to see her mom again. They said, you think I don't know that? They said, you at least get a chance to see your kids again. Now, I'm not going to sit here as long as you did last time. I'm not going to sit here and waste my time with you. If you don't got nothing to say, you can go. She said, y'all got me convicted. He said, no, ma'am, you're being charged. She said, everybody got me convicted. Where am I supposed to go now? He was like, so you don't want to talk?
She said, Jean told her she was in a coma. They was like, who is Jean? And I'm pretty sure she said Jean was her lawyer. So they was like, you don't want to talk? You want to talk to Jean? Who you want to talk to? She said, I don't know.
I just don't know.
She's bawling, y'all. She's rubbing her eyes. She's stressed. Then they was like, listen, I'm going to tell it to you like this. We can get your side of the story, or we cannot have your side. Right now, we got Heather's side of the story, right? And we can get yours or we cannot, but we're still moving forward. And the feeling that I get is that you're trying to protect somebody. And if I had to guess who you're trying to protect, I'm going to say it's Brittany. She's like, no, I'm not. They said, I'm going to give you a chance to help yourself. Now, when I say help yourself, you still going to jail tonight. Don't get that confused. But when it comes to the court case, maybe there's a reason to make them more lenient with you or something. So I'm trying to get your side of the story so that you can help yourself down the line. But you're for sure going to jail. It was like, we have so much evidence against you. They said, even your car, we got the tire marks at the crime scene. She said, I let everybody use my car. They said, listen, I you're flailing right now. You're trying to come up with anything you can to get out of it. And I'm not really interested. So what you trying to do? She said, I'm ready. Just take me to jail. And one of the officers leave, and she's left with one more officer. They was like, all right, I'm about to get your paperwork. Let me read you your rights. You're about to be arrested. Da-da-da-da. He goes, and she's left with one officer. And the officer is like, I just want to let you know, Brittany's going to jail too. But you were definitely booking her, sending her down to the big house. She was like, this is so serious. This is so... And he was like, let me show you something. And she just crying. He starts showing her pictures of Adriana burnt up. He was like, do you know how bad she was in there? She was like, her skin was so charred, we couldn't tell if she was black or white. And she was white. He was like, her jaw was broken. Like, all of this shit, like, y'all did a fucking number on her. And she was just like, no. But she never, ever cops to it, right? So they charged Tina with first-degree murder and felony murder with kidnapping. Heather is charged with second-degree murder. And Brittany is charged as an adult with first-degree murder.
Now, they're all held at the Escambia County Jail without bail. Brittany, she pled no contest, and she did not have a trial. And Heather, she decided to plead guilty to second-degree murder. And the exchange for that is that she would testify at Tina's trial. Tina, she pleads not guilty, and her trial begins on June 18th, 2012.
Take that shit to trial, bitch. Take that shit to trial, bitch. Take that shit to trial, bitch. Take that shit to trial.
Adriana's father, Sammy, was the only family member of hers that was present at the trial. He sat through the entire thing. He listened to almost every detail, but some of them he had to step out. The assistant state attorney, Bridget Jensen, was on the case, and the prosecution presented many theories that would lead up to Tina murdering Adriana. They ultimately said that it was because Tina and Adriana got into an argument over Brittany and Brittany's boyfriend and Adriana being with him, as well as Tina calling the cops on her baby daddy. And once Adriana tased Brittany, those two, with the help of their neighbor, inflicted an insurmountable amount of pain on Adriana. The prosecution laid out 5 photos of Adriana's charred body, and the Alabama medical examiner explained each photo in detail. You can tell the flame started here. As you can see, this is her alive and this is her charred body. There is so much. As you can see, here is the 10%. Those itty-bitty 10% that she does not have burns. During the medical examiner going through the charred bodies, that's when Adriana's dad he had to step out, which I totally get. The prosecution also called some of Tina's friends to testify against her. You know, Pam. Pam came up and told the truth about how Brittany said that we beat her up and we lit her and we didn't look back. Pam went up there and said how Tina was like, oh, girl, you should finish her off. And Pam was like, no. And they asked her, why did you decide to step forward? And she was like, because I knew someone got hurt and I knew who did it. Like, she worked at the hospital. She got a duty. What are you doing? Terrence, who was the man that found Adriana, testified that when he first saw her, that he was like, I smelled gasoline. She wasn't wearing any clothes. And I didn't know what to make of her. Heather went on trial. And of course, that was part of her plea deal. And she testified that she was forced to participate by Tina. Tina showed her how to use the stun gun and was basically like, you in on this and we finna beat this bitch and don't you dare try to go against what I say. When the prosecution closed their argument, they said that Tina had intention to kill Adriana. She had every intention that Adriana would not make it from those woods alive. Now, Tina's defense attorney, his name was John J. Gontrack, and he claimed that the state's evidence, it's basically a house of cards. And he was, listen, what is clearly is seen here is that this is not a premeditated attack. If it was a premeditated attack, they would have tried to clean up the crime scene. Shoes, taser, the weapon. If they would have thought this through, they would have had a plan for everything that was going to happen that night. When he talked to Pam when she was on the stand, prosecution said, now you know Tina to be a good mother. And Pam was like, yes, I do. I know her that she worked hard. She worked overnights at Waffle House and she would do anything for her daughter and that she did the best that she could. She was like, oh, okay, that's really great. The big thing is, was Tina the one that set the fire? The defense comes out with a witness. This witness's name is Wendy Moy. Now, Wendy is incarcerated in Florida. But Wendy and Heather were bunkies. And while Heather was locked up, she told Wendy that she was going to take the plea. And she told Wendy that she was the one that lit Adriana on fire, not Tina. Now, of course, the prosecution is trying to negate this because, Miss Wendy, aren't you trying to use this testimony as a way to get a transfer, a way to move to another bunkie? Weren't you trying to negotiate the terms of you giving this information? And she was like, yes, but that doesn't make it any less true. I just have valuable information. You know how people are when it's inmate witnesses. They sometimes believe you, sometimes they don't. And on June 21st, 2012, Tina is found guilty of first-degree murder. Now, she's in Florida. Florida has the death penalty, so she either faces the death penalty or life in prison without the possibility of parole. The penalty phase began on June 25th, 2012, 9 a.m. sharp. Now, during the penalty phase, there's still a round of testimony, and the defense is trying to appeal to the judge, talking about Tina's upbringing, talking about her sons, talking about the experiences that her and her brother had growing up. He had everybody in Tina's family coming in, uncles, cousins, everybody, to talk about how her upbringing attributed to the lifestyle that she lived, thus putting her in the situation for this murder to even happen. What do we know about Tina's past? You guys know. You guys are here. We know that she had a rough upbringing. We know that she has had bouts of sobriety and bouts of relapse. And here we are, and she's relapsed, and something tragic happens. So now they're trying to say you can sentence her to life because she still has the ability to live a life with sobriety inside of the prison walls.
Because if these are the decisions you make while you're high, you need to stay sober.
They did get her a mental exam, and it said that she didn't exhibit any signs of psychosis. They did say that she had a low IQ, it was in the low average range. And they did say that Tina really exhibited anger and rage, and because of those times where she would go into a complete rage, she did not know how to control herself. But also concluding, like, this is a part of the way that she was raised. So not knowing how to properly control your emotions is something that we've seen when there is significant childhood trauma. Now, the prosecution on the other end said, yes, all this can be true. But the day of the murder, she was not under extreme stress. The day of the murder, she was teaching somebody how to use the weapon. So this wasn't an automatic, Adriana triggered her and then she went off on a rage. This was planned. This was thought out. This was meticulous. This is not just flying off the handle.
You know what Bart really told me it was planned? Is that the gas tank was already sitting in the trunk.
Yeah, there's a lot of it that was already planned, such as Brittany saying, we're fixing to kill Adriana.
Right. Like, y'all didn't even set it up where it could be a thought that y'all didn't.
On June 26, 2012, The jury recommended a death sentence by a unanimous vote. After that, the state presented a letter from the mother of the victim. The defense presented several records from the Illinois DCFS and a letter from one of Tina's friends. Tina, she apologized when she said her final words. She said, quote, "Adriana died a horrific death, and I was one of the ones who participated in taking her life. She didn't deserve that at all." Now, in Florida, in death penalty cases, there is a phase that's called a Spencer hearing. You've probably heard us talk about this before. I feel like one or two times. Now, this is the last chance for the defense to plead their case to the state Supreme Court. And in the Spencer hearing, Tina cried and she told the judges that she is so sorry that she helped in this. She remembered back and looking, she remembers her looking at the autopsy photos and she said, and they haunt me. Like, I have nightmares every day because I was the one that participated in this. Is there a way that you would just spare my life and not sentence me to death?
I wonder if there's people who would be like, don't spare my life. I just go ahead, send me down.
There are people like that. Israel Keyes, he went down with a lot of murders under his belt, and he said that he did not want a mainstream thing. He said, I want you to just trial me, sentence me to death, and I'll give you the names of everybody I killed. He said, because I didn't want my daughter to know me as this person. And he was, like, killing folks. Mm-hmm. And so then they put him in the news, and that was the one thing he said he did not want was to be in the news, and he would help them solve all these murders. They put him in the news, he killed himself. So now they're just trying to figure out which murders are his. They find little kill kits all over the United States, and that's what he was known for. And now this cases that could have been solved went down with him.
Because you blew it.
Because he wanted to tell the whole world. Mm-hmm.
Run in your mouth. It's September 28th of 2012. Judge Gary Burgosh sentenced Tina to death for murder of Adriana Zimmerman. In order to give a death sentence, the jury had to find that the state had proven beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the three statutory aggravated circumstances. One, the murder was committed in a cold, calculated, premeditated manner without any pretense of moral or legal justification. And according to court documents, this is considered a great weight, which I think, like we said, she's proven that. She was supplied with the weapons, supplied with the fuel. They talked before it even happened about how it was going to happen. Two, the murder was especially heinous, atrocious, and cruel, which also held a great weight. You don't get more cruel than setting somebody on fire while they're alive. And then three, for the felony murder with kidnapping, they had to prove that the murder was committed while she was doing the kidnapping, which was a significant weight. Not great, but significant. The court did find one mitigating circumstance, which was that Tina had no history of prior criminal activity, and I guess, like, a violent criminal activity, because she definitely had criminal activity. But this, they said that only held a minimal weight, so it wasn't helping her out all that much. They also wanted to consider her upbringing as a whole, but they found that these circumstances only held some weight in the totality of the crime. Like, yes, you had a hard life. Does that mean y'all should have beat this girl's ass and set her on fire? No, not quite. They found that the aggravating circumstances outweighed the mitigating circumstances, and they noted that, quote, particularly because of the heinous, atrocious, or cruel nature of the murder of Adriana Zimmerman, it falls into the class of murder for which the death penalty is reserved. The last thing Tina said at her sentencing was she was sorry for her involvement, and that she wanted Adriana's family to have closure, and that she hopes that they got it today. Now, Brittany was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole, and she was only 16 at the time of the murder. But at this time, it wasn't unconstitutional to give juveniles an automatic life sentence until the Supreme Court made the ruling, and Heather got 25 years in prison after she took a plea deal.
Now, Brittany tried to withdraw her no contest plea, stating that she was a minor at the time. She was able to get an appeal based on the now Supreme Court ruling, but with this plea, she would only just get a new sentencing hearing. It's not like she gets a brand new trial. And she was sentenced to life once again. But because she was a juvenile, she is going to be able to get her sentence reviewed in 15 years. Tiffany Blount, who is the library supervisor at the prison, spoke when Brittany was trying to get her appeals and said that Brittany has been working in the library since she's gotten there, that when she first got there, she was a little shaken up. She really didn't know what to do. But over the years, she really has seen Brittany mature and come into her own. There was a mitigation specialist that also spoke on Brittany's behalf, Brooke Butler, that said that while Brittany was in prison, she was taking those times to just take hold of what the prison had to offer, the programs. She really got close to God. She really just wanted a stable, consistent life. And, you know, it's kind of sad that your first time being able to have a stable, consistent life. Right. You know, the first time that you get some stability, the first time that you get some consistency, the first time you know where your meals are coming from is when you're locked up.
Definitely says a lot.
Yeah. Well, she is still in prison in the state of Florida, but she will have a chance to have her sentence reviewed again. But as of right now, she is sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Tina, of course, tried to appeal her conviction in July of 2014. She appealed on the basis of whether the trial court applied the correct rule of law for each aggravating circumstances. They said that they needed substantial evidence to support their findings. And in order to do that, the three-part test must be cold, calculated, and premeditated to be a first-degree murder. And she was saying that it wasn't that. First, they said that the killings must be a product of a cold, calm reflection. That's what cold means. Now, Tina was like, listen, it may have been calculated. It may have been premeditated. Okay. And yes, my intent was a desire to seek revenge on behalf of my daughter. But cold? It was not that. I was upset. Like I said, I was seeking revenge. I was angry. I did not sit and think about it. I acted in the emotion of it all. Therefore, I should not have the death penalty. Please give me life without the possibility of parole. Her appeal was denied. No worries, but she's going to try again. And she says this time that she had ineffective counsel during the time of the trial. She said that some of the jurors, they should have been dismissed because they were biased. And now this new evidence shows that she wasn't the ringleader. Now, according to Tina, remember, Heather is going around the jail telling people, oh, I'm the one that set her on fire. And I was going to make sure that she went down because that's what she gets for messing with my husband. Y'all forgot Tina was messing with Adriana's husband. So Heather's going around saying, yeah, I made sure that Tina got the death penalty. That's what you get for messing with my man. I'm in here. You ain't here farther. She tries to tell the judge that. They said, that's just hearsay. Real
said,
hearsay.
Oh.
Now it's hearsay. They said that's not enough evidence. They deny her appeal. And he said, honestly, it really doesn't matter which one of y'all poured the gasoline. The gasoline was poured. The girl was set on fire. The girl is dead.
And y'all
so it don't matter who did it. Like, exactly.
Like, she didn't get that lesser sentence because she didn't pour the gas. She got it because she cooperated and told on you.
Exactly. And she probably did it because you were messing with her husband. I believe that. Now, as of March 2023, Tina is trying her damnedest to get out of jail. She is now 52 years old. She is claiming that Heather is still going around bragging, that she was the one that killed Adriana, that she was the ringleader, not Tina. And Tina's trying to just get her sentence commuted to life. She had a hearing sometime in March, but honestly, I could not figure out what happened in that hearing. But in March of this year, she had a hearing. I'm sure somebody will be able to find it. And she is currently in Ocala, Florida, at the Lowell Annex. We got a couple
people. Ooh, not Ocala.
Mm-hmm, girl. Brittany is serving time at the same prison as her mama in Ocala. As of right now, she does not have an execution date. Of course, everybody is back and forth about if she should be sentenced to death or not. Is it fair? Does the punishment match the crime? Is it justified? Heather is set to be released on February 29th, 2032, and she is currently in Carrabelle, Florida, at the Gadsden Correctional Facility. All right, y'all, it's time for...
Well, I'm not black. I'm OJ.
I didn't do it, but if I did, this is how I would have got away with it.
I didn't do it, but if I did, we're damn sure not leaving any shoes or anything at the crime scene. For sure not fucking tracks from your head.
I don't know if they thought that everything was just going to burn up in the fire together, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Probably if I had to do this, I definitely probably would have killed her before setting her on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you were going for a different type of sadistic vibe. The reason they could get to them so fast was because she told them from their mouth. Dead people can't talk. Don't know if they would have got away with it because they left so much shit there, but it probably would have took some more time. The whole reason she even got found is because she was alive asking for help.
If you can barely keep hold of your children, why are you worried about somebody else's children?
Right. I was like, that's a little pot calling the kettle black.
I ain't do it, but if I did, if you really wanted to do something, when Adriana tased Brittany, I would have called the police. I would have pressed charges. And boom, you won.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you pressed some charges and pressed.
She tried to say in the interview, she was like, I ain't even pressed charges against her when she tased
and
my
pressed.
Daughter. She was like, I don't even think they asked me. They was like, because you ain't the one who called them out there. She called them out there.
Right, because she was the one getting beat up mm-hmm. and had to defend herself.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't do it, but if I did, be the first one to call the police.
I ain't do it, but if I did, why do they always run their mouth? Why are you telling people that you did it? And Brittany, why are you telling people that you're going to do it?
And why are you asking other people to finish her off? You told her to finish her off in the hospital like she was Martin Luther King Jr.
Speaking of which, I ain't do it, but if I did, I'm not sending nobody to finish her off. One, if she survived, it ain't murder. I've got a chance of seeing the light of day. But two, you've got yet another person involved, and the police are already looking at you. It's just, hey. Her surviving would have been the best thing for you.
And honestly. Because then you would have had a Berlina case where it's if she decides to take her own life medically, is it murder or is it not?
Right.
And Americans would eat that up.
Oh, man. Sensational. Yeah. Definitely want to put a second hit out for her life.
Right.
Because I feel like the reason why people try and finish them off is so they won't talk. She already talked. You're too late.
Because you didn't do a good job the first time.
Because you didn't do it right the first time.
That's all I got. You grown as hell inserting yourself in teenage drama. And I get having your kids back.
And see, the thing is...
But when are you
going to
stop the cycle?
I feel like... I don't even know. They're all different ages, right? And they're just all... They've got this weird collective... Where you've got, like, what, she's what, at least 35, if not somewhere between 35 and 40 years old. That's Tina. Then Heather is 21. And then Brittany is 16. And you had the 13-year-old at the house. Like, you just around who you around. And it don't matter if that's your peer or what. Y'all just all kicking it together.
Right. Parole or no parole?
I would parole Brittany. I like the work that she's doing. I think she should have a second chance. She was set up to fail. Like, your mama egged you into doing that. That's all you've known is violence and abuse. And she, you know what I mean? Like, you already know she was sick because she got excited by watching her burn. She needs help.
What about Tina?
Oh, Tina. That's crazy, girl. Because they was like, she didn't even have... a violent streak into her, but then, like, they was like, but she was so high also. But then again, she said, that's not the highest I've ever been. It's really, like, where did that come from? Like, I get trying to, maybe it was, like, some deep down rage, right? Where she never felt protected by her parents, and she just had to prove to her daughter that she would protect her through all costs.
In a way that her mom never did.
Yeah. Like, her mom or her dad, and it just kind of, like, maybe this was something deeper for her that Adriana didn't even deserve, but, like, this was everyone's revenge, right? Like, now that I got mm-hmm. the chance, you're going to get it for everybody, which, again, should be looked into. You need help.
Right. I would give her life without the possibility of parole.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, I would commute her life, but I would not parole her.
Yeah, I think that's
all right,
good. That's life with parole.
Yeah. No, life without
parole. No, life without parole. Yeah, there you go.
Okay, let's read some reviews. All right, you guys, it's time to read some reviews. You can leave us a review literally anywhere. Leave us a 5-star review and make it really nice. If you don't like it, then don't say anything because snitches get stitches. Oof. All right, Tazzy, you have one?
Yeah. This one says, can't stop, won't stop. Booze, thank you. I love this podcast. I'm a single mom. I'm always on the go, and these episodes scare the sugar honey iced tea out of me sometimes. Okay, most of the time. All right, all the time. But I'm hooked, and it blows my mother-loving mind, the thought process behind the murderesses. I hate the episodes when the babies have been hurt. It makes me hear the Kill Bill theme music. But y'all are fabulous. Thank you for the distraction from the mundane life. I talk to you, now talk back. XO, hey girl, we talking. What's up? Thanks for listening.
This one is 5 stars from Nanai So Sweet. She says, I finally have an Apple ID to leave a review. Been listening since 2021. Thank you, girl. I feel like you deserve that shout out.
Listen, you do not have to have an Apple ID or an iPhone to listen to Apple Podcasts. You can just download the Apple Podcasts app.
Even on your Android?
You can.
Tell us more. And then you guys should go ahead and follow the podcast so you get automatic updates.
Yes, yes, yes. Automatic
just
updates.
Just do that wherever you're.
Yeah, Spotify, Google, Apple, follow, subscribe, hit that button.
Yeah, and you can do that anywhere. And if you want to follow us personally, you can. On Twitter at Sisters Who Kill. On Instagram at Sisters Who Kill Pod. On TikTok at Sisters Who Kill Podcast. On Facebook, Sisters Who Kill Podcast. There's a public page. On Facebook, there's also a private page, Sisters Who Kill Podcast Private Discussion Group. There are some really fun questions for you to answer. And then you can get in and join in on all these people that don't know how to control themselves in a group that are like-minded in the simple fact that they like true crime and listen to Sisters Who Kill. Anything else from you, friend?
Talk to us, we talk back.
Bye.
Bye.